You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The book of Proverbs is a collection of metaphor and short sayings that was compiled maybe 2,500 years ago, right after the Jews returned from the exile in Babylon. To add some authority, it's often been claimed to have been written by Solomon, but it's actually five pretty obvious different sections, some of which is actually modeled on an older Egyptian text, the instruction of Amenemhotep. The whole goal was to encourage the reader to acquire a personal standard of values and practical know-how in this crazy world. It's part of what's called the wisdom literature because it appeals to the student to open up to wisdom, to get knowledge, and be open to teaching. Throughout Proverbs, wisdom is personified as chokmah in Hebrew, or sophia in Greek, both of which are grammatically feminine. So you'll note in modern translations, wisdom is referred to with feminine pronouns, she, her, hers. Our passage today offers some of the benefits of finding wisdom. And as we prepare ourselves for a new year that promises to be full of challenges, I think wisdom sounds like a pretty good companion to have along the way.
Our words of wisdom are from Proverbs 3:13 through 18. Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding. For her income is better than silver, and her revenue better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her.
Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Sixty years ago, the United States was in the midst of the kind of trauma that it seems difficult to imagine having survived. President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, spawning violence and opposition across the South, and including the murder of civil rights workers by the KKK. The war in Vietnam was escalating, Barry Goldwater's rhetoric was polarizing the country, and riots and unrest were erupting in cities and across college campuses. On May 31st, 1964, less than a year after the I Have a Dream speech, Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at an event hosted by Religious Witness for Human Dignity at the LA Coliseum. Of course, most of the nearly 15,000 attendees were there to hear Dr. King address the pressing issues of the day. But they were in for a surprise. Also on the podium was actor, dancer, and comedian Dick Van Dyke. When he rose to speak, they were in for another surprise, because what he chose to read was an address written by science fiction writer and creator of The Twilight Zone, Rod Serling. If you're familiar with The Twilight Zone, you know that in many ways, it was a vehicle for Serling to offer a critique of many of the social and moral issues of the day. I recently saw a video of the now 99-year-old Dick Van Dyke reading excerpts from this speech and quipping that it may mean even more today than it did then. Well, I couldn't agree more. So here is Rod Serling's 1,000-word address, spoken by Dick Van Dyke in 1964. Ladies and gentlemen, this may be the most non-political speech you ever hear. And indeed, If you look for controversy, what I'm about to say conjures up little conflict. We have reached a moment in time when restless people, dispossessed people, angry and impatient people, and anguished people look up and reach out for an elusive justice oft promised them, long denied them, but in the eyes of God and human conscience is their due and should be their expectation. I say this is non-political and non-controversial. We're not talking about interracial marriage or whether a person can fence their yard or a hot dog vendor carefully select their customer or an innkeeper choose not to accommodate a particular traveler. These are the ramifications of the problem. They are not the problem. There have to be some bridges built. But first, we have to acknowledge the rivers. This is what I think is basic. This is what I believe to be the most common denominator in this spring of 1964. This must be first, the recognition and then the admission that the dignity of human beings is not negotiable. The eminent worth of humanity has no pro and no con, and the desperate need for an understanding and a respect between all human beings is as fundamental as the process of breathing in and breathing out. On this spring night, we look toward Washington, D.C., and hear the echoed overtones of a debate. We watch the struggle to invoke a cloture. We hear the voices of the willful foot draggers and the hopeful sprinters as they trade and compromise and give battle for what they believe. But again, there is something happening on this earth transcendent of the senates, the governments, the temporal voices of the champions of rights, and the filibusters of wrong. What is happening is that a whole world has suddenly become cognizant of its oneness. The idea of our common humanity has ceased to be an abstract. It has taken on form and dimension and breadth and meaning. Remember that lyrical stab at truth from another century? Every man's death diminishes me. But in this 1964th year of our Lord, every person's dignity, every person's hunger, every person's search for freedom, every person's life reinforces me and revitalizes me and rededicates me. Mr. Lincoln said, "We cannot be half free and half slave." And now, 100 years later, we find that we cannot be half hungry and half content, half with dignity, half with shame, half with freedom, half with a simple yearning to be free, half with prerogatives, half just asking for a few, half superior, half denied even the right to prove equality. Have you ever heard that phrase? You cannot legislate human love. You cannot pass a law to stop people from hating. Battle slogans of those who don't want to be bothered. A statement of philosophy from 20th century non-philosophers who would just as well melt down the test tubes used to look for the microbes and the bacteria and the virus that caused cancer. Cancer is with us, so why fight it? Leave it to the individual patients. But don't make waves. Don't stir up the riverbed. And above all, don't contemplate the beauty of this earth or deeds of love. The small, gradual, but inexorable move upward of the human animal toward an enlightened moment in time when the person next door is simply the neighbor. The Negro is the darker neighbor. The South American is my Latin neighbor. The Japanese, my Asian neighbor. You can't legislate against prejudice? You would rather perhaps accept it as part of the innate personality of Homo sapiens? Would you rather say that it's with us, it's here to stay, it's part of the social phenomena of our time? If this is the premise to be lived with, accepted, and God help us, embraced, then let us throw away theology. Let us unencumber ourselves of the premise of God. Let us tear up our art, our literature, all of our culture, and let us retire to a rubble of our own making and manufacture barbed wire instead of stained glass. Hatred is not the norm. Prejudice is not the norm. Suspicion, dislike, jealousy, and scapegoating, none of these things is the transcendent facet of the human personality. They are the diseases. They are the cancers of the soul. They are the infectious and contagious viruses that have bled humanity over the years. But because they have been and are, is it necessary that they shall be? I think not. As long as there is one voice left to say welcome to a stranger, if there is but one hand outstretched to say enter and share, if there is but one mind remaining to think a thought of warmth and friendship, then there's also a future in which we will find more than one hand, more than one voice, and more than one mind dedicated to the cause of human equality. Wishful, hopeful, unassured, problematic, and not to be guaranteed? Yeah, this is all true. But again, on this spring evening of 1964, a little of humanity's awareness has shown itself. A little of our essential decency, our basic goodness, our preeminent dignity has been made a matter of record. There will be moments of violence and expressions of hatred and an ugly re-echo of intolerance. But these are the clinging vestiges of a decayed past, not the harbingers of the better, cleaner future. To those who tell us that the inequality of the human animal is a necessary evil, we must respond by simply saying that first, it is evil. But second, it is not necessary. We prove it sitting here now. We prove it by reaffirming our faith. We prove it by having faith in our reaffirmations. Horace Mann said, "Be ashamed to die until you have won some victory for humanity." Let's paraphrase that thought. Let us be ashamed to live without that victory. There it is, isn't it? Echoing through the years from 1964. Yeah, we have seen some change, but two steps forward and one step back is nowhere near enough. And so, as we prepare to embark on the journey of a new year, let's remember that Jesus' priority was not about coercing a bunch of homogeneous dogmatists to believe 8 unbelievable things before breakfast. It was about changing the world here and now, one unique, fragile, questioning person at a time. Don't let yourself be threatened by the fundamentalists or the purveyors of Christian nationalism or even the temptation to cling to what you remember from the churches most of us grew up in. As Rod Serling suggested, the one non-negotiable going forward is human dignity. And with that comes all kinds of implications for the way we live and move and interact with the world. That's why now more than ever, It's important for the Fountains to embrace its identity as a part of the resistance, a place where people are free to ask the tough questions and to retool whatever this thing called faith is, to reboot our priorities and get down to the task of doing what Jesus asked us to do. What that looks like is different for each of us, and we're going to need an abundance of the kind of wisdom Proverbs talks about in our passage today. So, may we be grateful for any of the wisdom gained through the trials of 2024 and 1964, for that matter. And may we not shy away from the struggles 2025 promises. For it's only to those willing to open their hearts and minds, to learn, to risk, and to grow, that wisdom and all her attending benefits will be in attendance. Be well. Don't give in. And may wisdom be your companion on the way.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.